WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News,
app.
I'm Dave Packer. After torrential rain that turned creeks, brooks, and streets into rushing rivers, emergency crews in suburban Philadelphia are still looking for a missing 9-month-old boy and his 2-year-old sister who were swept away in a family car Saturday. Already identifying several flood deaths, Bucks County Coroner Meredith Buck.
It is a sad time for these families, this community, and all of Bucks County, as all efforts are focused on finding the missing children.
Temporarily blocking Iowa's new ban on abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy, a county judge's challenges go ahead. Food made with grain, cookies, bread, and other products in the U.S. are still at inflated prices and could go higher as grain's priced on the world market. And now Russia's not renewed a deal to allow grain shipments out of Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
It's actually gotten food onto people's plates. But even when the food wasn't going directly to certain countries or certain people, it also was helping to keep prices low because it's a global market.
This is ABC News. Other things, call them unidentified aerial phenomena that may have come from the sky.
Representative Tim Burchett announcing on Twitter that the House Oversight Committee will hold a hearing on UAPs on Wednesday. The hearing comes after several Republican lawmakers promised to look deeper into the flying objects following unproven whistleblower allegations that the U.S. military has recently recovered a crashed alien spacecraft. Burchett told reporters Monday that he's done with the cover-ups, but couldn't elaborate into specifics. Ike Ajachi, ABC News, Washington.
Is there financial trouble at Twitter? CEO Elon Musk says his social media platform is in the red due to a nearly 50% drop in ad revenue and heavy debt. The Tesla CEO acquired Twitter last fall in a $44 billion deal. The major indices closed higher Monday, with investors looking ahead at earnings statements from big corporations this week. Among them releasing profit statements, Tesla, Netflix, and Bank of America. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in Amory. A woman was sentenced for killing a man in a head-on crash after driving the wrong way on I-94 near Hudson last October. 32-year-old Amber Lee Pospisil of Alexandria, Minnesota, will serve 15 years in prison with 10 years of extended supervision after pleading no contest to homicide by intoxicated use of a vehicle as part of a plea deal. Online court records show 3 other counts were dismissed but read in. Pospisil told investigators she'd been drinking at a wedding in Wisconsin and was driving to a hotel but didn't remember driving the wrong way on the interstate. Police found an empty bottle of vodka in her vehicle, according to court documents. The Wisconsin DNR is looking for help in finding stolen trout. The DNR said that someone stole rare brown trout from the St. Croix Falls State Fish Hatchery on June 19th. Anyone with information should call 1-800-TIP-WDNR. From the Civic Media News Desk in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
It's so hot. Wait, now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media weather team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Listen to this mission. Highlight ag research from the university, showcase education, and show off new technology. Written almost 70 years ago, it's still what you'll find at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. This year's show includes hot tech like drones, food grown across the state, and how it all impacts our economy. Sauk County is your Farm Technology Days host at the Badger Steam and Gas Engine Club in Baraboo, July 18th through 20th. Details at wifarmtechdays.org. I'm Terry.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM radio for every vehicle act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
This is the Paul Revere Show. Attorney Craig Mastantuono, guest hosting for regular host Mark Thompson. We're here tonight with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke from the 18th District. Think of that as Milwaukee's West Side. Welcome, Representative Goyke.
Evening, Craig. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Well, can you tell our listeners just a real quick description of the 18th District and how long you've been a state rep?
Yeah, so I'm in my 11th year. The 18th District is a big chunk of the North Side, the West Side, and about 12,000 people in the city of Wauwatosa. Basically Marquette University's campus over to almost to the zoo, north of I-94, all the way up to Congress, north of Capitol. So really diverse, residential, integrated, diverse part of the city of Milwaukee.
And a lot of distinct parts of the city, different from each other, too.
Yeah, definitely a unique district to represent industrial, residential, commercial, wealthy census tracts, impoverished census tracts, everywhere in between. So a lot of different issues and ground to cover. Exciting and challenging at the same time.
Absolutely. So, Evan, we go back to your early days as a state public defender before you joined the legislature on a more regular basis, or were elected to the legislature. And my background as a criminal defense attorney and in and around the Milwaukee area really sets up the conversation for tonight, which I told you before the show, I wanted to focus on our city, the city of Milwaukee, and crime and criminal justice and violence prevention in the city. We've got an hour to do it. There's a lot of topics you and I can fill that time with. But maybe we'll start here. You just went through budget. You're a member of the Joint Finance Committee in the legislature. And, you know, that's a process of the governor putting forth a wish list, if you will, on a variety of policy initiatives, including crime prevention and public safety, and then a host of other issues that our state deals with. What was in there that the governor proposed, or a sampling of some of those things that were taken out by the Republicans in the legislature, that gives our listeners kind of a sample, if you will, a sample plate of how the two parties see things differently on certain issues related to crime and criminal justice?
Yeah. It's interesting you ask for a sample. So the governor's budget was introduced in the middle of February. And then in early May, after a series of listening sessions and town halls, and you know, I think we had over 1,300 people actually come and appear in front of our committee. More than 3,000 people wrote in or called into the committee itself, plus all of the other legislators, senators, and representatives hearing from those folks. So on the very first day, this is early May, the Republicans' very first action was to remove 545 items from the governor's budget, and that those 545 would never be able to be reintroduced or redebated throughout the rest of the budget process. So in that motion, you can imagine, if you're listening, 545 items from a state budget, it kind of fundamentally reshapes the nature of the entire budget. Now, in the world of the criminal legal system, there's a lot. There were at least a half dozen what we would traditionally call justice reform measures, how people are sentenced, how long they're incarcerated for, what opportunities those individuals would have while incarcerated, programs to help them reintegrate when coming home. So stripped, all removed. And you can think of, you know, some other part of our conversation tonight, I hope, leads into areas of like public health and environmental health equity. So there are huge amounts of public health investments that would reduce or seek to eliminate racial disparities in health outcomes. Some of that is what I was saying, like environmental health, like money to remove lead service laterals or lead paint abatement to Medicaid postpartum coverage or public health workers out in the community to help people get enrolled and signed up for healthcare. I'm going to go ahead and answer your next question, which was hopefully maybe going to be like, what made it to the finish line?
Sure.
That changed the justice system. So many of those kind of proactive things got removed and stripped. Some positive things did make it through the budget. Most importantly for the justice system were increases in salaries for prosecutors, public defenders, and private lawyers that help take public cases. That was deeply and desperately needed. The system was really is really struggling. You have more of a day-to-day vision from the trenches than I do, but from all accounts, we were hearing this was just really a state of emergency. And then within the correctional system, increases for guards and officers and nurses and educators, because we've heard the same thing, high vacancy rates in our state prisons.
Paul Reverso, Attorney Craig Mastantuono. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke. Yes, that last portion was what I was going to follow up with, is some of the things that made it through. And to give some perspective, I think it had been 10 plus years since those types of numbers were adjusted in terms of salaries for district attorneys, public defenders, and then the pay rate for private lawyers that contract to take cases. So they were due for an adjustment. The past 10 years were marked by a lot of people joining prosecution offices and public defender offices and just leaving after a couple of years, unable to make the finances work. I think before the numbers were raised, I think the starting salary for a public defender or district attorney was somewhere around $55,000, $56,000 a year, which is a good amount of money, but not when compared to the cost of a legal education and paying the bills and having a couple of kids and getting a life started, right?
Right. No, when I started, it was $49,900 or something like that, and I had $200,000 in debt. So it's hard to make that math work after a couple of years. You know, there's a lot that mid-career level, people really hit a difficult spot.
It is. And I think it's hard to communicate to the public, at least from a political perspective, maybe more so from a policy perspective, the importance of these offices for being able to keep talent, right? You want good prosecutors to stay. You want good public defenders to stay. And the kind of, you and I know this, Evan, but let's provide some insight to our listeners. When you have good lawyers on both sides of a criminal case, the savings for the community are countless in many ways, both numerically and from a policy perspective. Do you ever talk to your colleagues about that?
Yeah, and I think it could, and I'm glad that you bring this up because it goes even beyond the political sphere. I think people in this country have an expectation and should have an expectation. Justice is, you know, a pretty key founding principle of the United States of America. The Bill of Rights was the most fundamental criminal justice reform document ever passed by humankind up to its point, right? I mean, it's all about individual rights in this context. So, but that can't happen when people are overworked and underpaid, or when you can't attract and retain the top talent. Your case And it's not, you know, we sensationalize big cases, homicide cases. You see, like, Making a Murderer or some documentary about a wrongful conviction or the Innocence Project. But in reality, the justice system on a day-to-day basis is made up of little stuff. Disorderly conduct, bail jumping, retail theft. And every one of those people also deserve world-class legal representation and world-class prosecution that can see through the BS and can see the truth and can work together on understanding what the best outcome is for the individual.
Yeah, and can work efficiently and creatively, right? In other words, you know, talented lawyers don't get behind on their caseload as often. You know, talented lawyers think of creative outcomes to difficult situations that benefit society, protect the public interest, and afford a person who commits an offense perhaps a chance to do better, right? And when you have less imaginative or less efficient defenders and prosecutors, my perception is that justice suffers, and that you don't have as good of outcomes where you're really considering all the factors. I think that as a defense attorney, the worst kind of prosecutor is the kind that says, "Oh, this type of case. I do the same thing in all of these types of cases. That's just what we do in these cases." And you know, every case is different, and society deserves a little bit more of an individualized consideration for cases. And so, you know, my opinion is that justice suffers when the level of talent, creativity, initiative, and energy is lowered by what you're bringing to the case from the advocates.
Yeah, and I think that the wage increase that just is taking place or just took place July 1 as the budget was signed into effect will have a meaningful impact on the talent and the type of lawyers handling these cases. I don't know, you know, I think it might be easy, again, just for the listeners to kind of ignore this or to say, it'll never happen to me. I'll never be accused of a crime. But
I get that all the time, by the way.
Yeah, when they call you to represent
or their parents.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so I think it's important to remind, this is a goal of our society to have justice, to have truth, to have, you know, this is a promise of this country, really. And it's part of the social contract in this country. And I think you see it when it suffers, and it doesn't have to be you directly as a criminal defendant or a crime victim to have to care about the high quality of legal representation we have on both sides of the criminal legal system.
No, absolutely. So we're going to wrap up this 2 minutes here into the break with finishing up kind of that statewide perspective. So I was thinking also of things, you know, that kind of illustrate the governor's vision for criminal justice in our society writ large in the state. You know, things like legalization of marijuana was included in the budget. Raising the juvenile age for prosecution back up to 18. Wisconsin's kind of an outlier in that area. You know, studying sentences and their impact, including racial disparities. These were all items that were stripped out of the budget that are kind of things that the public can understand in a very simple way. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I hope that we can, throughout the program, talk a little bit more in depth about what you call raise the age, the idea that 17-year-olds, every 17-year-old in Wisconsin is an adult for every criminal action. Texas, Georgia, and Wisconsin are the three states in America that have that policy, and I think we're going to see some progress, hopefully, on that. But yeah, marijuana, I mean, big one. I'm glad you mentioned it. Not only avoiding criminal prosecution, but, you know, generating revenue that could be reinvested.
Yeah. And so very different views. I was amazed when I saw the Senate Majority Leader say a couple of months ago, well, we may be getting around to medical marijuana, we being the Republicans, but only for pain, no faking, and it would have to be, and the quote in the paper was, like for cancer pain. And I thought to myself, gee, how do we write a law that says that? Marijuana, yes, medical purposes only, and it's got to be like cancer pain. It left me speechless. Okay, we're going to go into the break with that. I'm going to come back to that juvenile question.
You left me speechless.
that was your colleague, not mine, from across the aisle. But we'll come back to that and pick it up and then focus the conversation more on our city when we return with Evan Goyke, Wisconsin State Rep.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done,
over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. 51 tonight under partly cloudy skies, west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. A blend of clouds and sun again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 80. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Chance for scattered showers. Lows around 57. Mid-80s Wednesday with a chance for scattered storms. Turning much cooler Thursday with highs in the upper 70s. Storms continue. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 70.
This summer, Lake Air, 1260 AM, WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom Ankrut. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuno sitting in for regular host Mark Thompson, and we're joined by Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke from the west side of the city and the east side, I guess, of portions of Wauwatosa. Is that right, Evan?
Right, right. The village and the East Osa.
And we left off the discussion. I'm glad that you compared Wisconsin, our discussion on crime, criminal justice, public safety. We're going to get focused on the city of Milwaukee in a minute, but you left off our discussion talking about the fact that the adult legal age for charging someone with a crime in Wisconsin is the age of 17. And you compared us to a few other states. I'll ask you to repeat them, but Wisconsin's an outlier in that regard. And I was an attorney in the 90s. I'm dating myself a bit when during the big tough on crime era, when really we bumped up, you know, class B felonies, you know, went from 20 years to 40 years to 60 years. Fleeing went from a misdemeanor to a felony across the board. Drug penalties were increased greatly. The juvenile age was lowered from 18 to 17. And then we ended the decade with truth in sentencing, which took away discretionary parole and an indeterminate sentencing system in favor of a system where 10 years means 10 years. And doesn't matter if you're doing really good in prison, you're going to serve your 10 years for the most part, with a few exceptions that have been expanded slightly over the years. So that was the big 90s. And the juvenile age was part of that. And you talked about some other states. Give us a perspective again on that.
Yeah. And just so that listeners understand, you know, Wisconsin's experience in that era was not unique. This was a bipartisan, both kind of nationally and federally. So the federal government expanded a lot of its criminal justice system and criminal penalties, its reach. And states did across the country as well. So that kind of became model legislation that proliferated around the country. And then, you know, maybe 10 years, 12, 15 years later, states started asking, you know, difficult questions about the return on investment. Did it work, right? We kind of pushed all of these tough on crime pieces of legislation during a crime spike in the 90s. And you know, so the people were asking, well, is this working? And there's a lot of data from other places around the country that says a lot of those policies don't make us safer. Specifically for 17-year-olds, the states that I mentioned in America, there are three states, Wisconsin, Texas, and Georgia, where 17-year-olds are adults for everything, every criminal act. So that means, I mean, mom and dad, you're listening, your 17-year-old takes your car out of the driveway, drives down the street, you know, gets arrested for some, you know, criminal action, but, you know, booked and processed with the adults, you know, in the adult jail, in the adult prison system, which is much more punitive than rehabilitative compared to the juvenile system.
Yeah, I started representing 17-year-old high school seniors after that change in the law when I was still a state public defender. And these were my clients in juvenile court the year prior to that law taking effect. And all of a sudden, we were in adult criminal court. And I could remember even, you know, conservative, I practiced as a public defender in Waukesha County, right, for 7 years. And I remember even conservative Republican prosecutors and judges having a squeamish look on their face going, why is this Waukesha South high school senior in my adult criminal courtroom for a retail theft charge?
Yeah, and there's no real way to go backwards, right? This wasn't a discretionary decision. There's a lot of discretion in the criminal system, and you know, we can't go down that rabbit hole in even an hour, but this is a state law that says all 17-year-olds are adults. And I wanted to highlight it. I'm glad that we took a couple minutes to talk about it, because as listeners think about how to get involved and how to work on justice issues, there's a lot that has been tried in Madison that hasn't gone forward. We covered some of them, some of those policies that were advanced in the state budget or the marijuana debate. I think this fall and winter coming up, you know, from kind of September 23 on, the rumblings in the hallways of the state capitol is more and more bipartisan support to engage, you know, a bipartisan bill, Republican lead authors to return 17-year-olds to the juvenile system.
Really? I just never thought we'd be able to, you know, because in criminal justice, largely, once you, you know, raise penalties, tighten up, get tougher, however you want to call it, right? It's really hard to undo later. It's just politically almost a non-starter at every turn, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, in my 11 years, we've probably increased criminal penalties 100 times. And I can think of no example that went the other way, right? That's exactly what you're saying, Craig. It's a one-way street. With the benefit of going 47th out of 50 is that you've seen, you know, people have done it. They've tried it, and they've, you know, all of our neighboring states have done it in different ways. And so there's a lot of really compelling evidence out there that says this is going to make us safer, not less safe, that the recidivism rate, the rate that those juveniles, 17-year-olds reoffend, is less when you take them through the rehabilitative juvenile system than through the more punitive adult system.
Yeah, it only makes sense. And I have quite a bit of experience in juvenile law myself that indicates the same, just anecdotally. We're going to head into the break in about a minute and a half. I want to again focus the conversation to our city. Let's set that up by telling our listeners that you are engaged in another race that doesn't involve your office as the 18th District State Representative. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, back in December of 22, I announced my candidacy. The election is in April of 2024. I am a candidate and seeking the office of City Attorney, which is a citywide elected position in the city of Milwaukee. Only a handful of municipalities elect their city attorneys. Milwaukee is one of them. We can get into more of the detail, but really important job. Essentially, the head of the law firm that represents the city of Milwaukee, about 35 lawyers, handling a whole bunch of different responsibilities, legal responsibilities for the city. And public safety does intertwine with that office in a pretty important way, which we can cover.
Yeah. So, you know, human resources, you know, employment law, zoning, real estate development, public work.
But just the sexy stuff. Yeah.
That's all advised, but also Department of Neighborhood Ordinance Enforcement, right? And so every type of non-criminal citation is prosecuted in the city of Milwaukee by the city attorney's office, right?
That's right. That's right.
And so where that brushes up against crime, criminal justice, nuisance abatement, maybe thrown in and some other issues, let's pick up the conversation on the other side of the break. We're here with State Representative Evan Goyke on the Paul Revere Show, Craig Mastantuono sitting in for Mark Thompson, talking crime, criminal justice, and public safety.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn directs WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. After torrential rain that turned creeks, brooks, and streets into rushing rivers, emergency crews in suburban Philadelphia are still looking for a missing 9-month-old boy and his 2-year-old sister who were swept away in a family car Saturday. Already identifying several flood deaths, Bucks County Coroner Meredith Buck.
It is a sad time for these families, this community, and all of Bucks County, as all efforts are focused on finding the missing children.
Temporarily blocking Iowa's new ban on abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy, a county judge as challenges go ahead. Food made with grain, cookies, bread, and other products in the U.S. are still at inflated prices and could go higher as grains priced on the world market. And now Russia's not renewed a deal to allow grain shipments out of Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
It's actually gotten food onto people's plates. But even when the food wasn't going directly to certain countries or certain people, it also was helping to keep prices low because it's a global market.
This is ABC News.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in Amory. A woman was sentenced for killing a man in a head-on crash after driving the wrong way on I-94 near Hudson last October. 32-year-old Amber Lee Pospisil of Alexandria, Minnesota, will serve 15 years in prison with 10 years of extended supervision after pleading no contest to homicide by intoxicated use of a vehicle as part of a plea deal. Online court records show 3 other counts were dismissed but read in. Pospisil told investigators she'd been drinking at a wedding in Wisconsin and was driving to a hotel but didn't remember driving the wrong way on the interstate. Police found an empty bottle of vodka in her vehicle, according to court documents. The Wisconsin DNR is looking for help in finding stolen trout. The DNR said that someone stole rare brown trout from the St. Croix Falls State Fish Hatchery on June 19th. Anyone with information should call 1-800-TIP-WDNR. From the Civic Media News Desk in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Democratic candidates are held to a higher moral standard. I don't see Representative McCarthy calling for George Santos to shamefully leave the halls of Congress. It is never principle above party. It is never principle and policy above person and personal achievement for Republicans.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuono filling in for regular host Mark Thompson, and we're having a discussion with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Voicki, Wisconsin's 18th District. Welcome back, Evan.
I'm still here, Craig. Thanks. This has been great. Time to get local. Let's talk about the block. Let's talk about the neighborhoods.
Absolutely. After our discussion on kind of the state budget issues revolving around crime and criminal justice, Let's talk about our city. It's not been an easy few years, right? We talked about from the perspective of public defenders and district attorneys and police, but from the community level, right? We saw a spike during pandemic that many states across the country, most cities saw in violent crime, particularly homicides. My perception as a practitioner of criminal law is that mental health as a whole, the mental health of our community and communities suffered greatly, the collective mental health, and that tends to elevate everything from disputes to domestic incidents to other crime-related occurrences. Then we had within all of that, the murder of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement, and a lot of the marches and protests and fallout from that. And by fallout from that, I mean, police community relations and what that movement and its response did, to that. So, what do you see around our block? And I'm not going to ask you, at least at this point, to relate it to the city attorney, the office of the city attorney. I mean, I think you've developed an expertise in your time as a state rep and prior to that as a public defender, as someone focused on criminal justice issues. So what are you seeing as a representative of our city?
Yeah, I would say, you know, one of the hardest parts of this discussion in the realm of politics, in the political sphere, is that everybody, and this is not, you know, this is a curse to the politicians, everyone wants an easy answer. What's the thing? What's the bill that we can pass? How, and sometimes that manifests itself into higher penalties, like we were talking about before the break. If we just made this tougher, the behavior will stop. And, you know, so people want a quick, easy fix to an intensely complex and difficult to solve problem. And so I guess my first answer to the perspective is this is really hard, and no one elected person has the answer, because we're dealing with people that have complexities and different, you know, issues, and it's not just one thing. Where I have gravitated, I have been elected and a representative in the north side, west side of Milwaukee now for a decade, and I have watched neighborhoods win and lose the fight to reduce crime and to keep that reduction down. And I have become a true believer in the kind of quality of life. There's an author named Patrick Sharkey who came to Milwaukee, and he talks about guardians. And sometimes police officers are guardians, and sometimes abuela, or like the matriarch or patriarch of the block, is the guardian. Sometimes it's an ambassador from the Near West Side Partners that kind of walks the street and shows that people are watching and declares the block not the place to engage in criminal activity. And we have lost a lot of those guardians, and we don't invest in those guardians. And some of them work for the government, and some of them absolutely do not work for the government. So I'll give you an example of a neighborhood in my district that I think really exemplifies the victory that can be made when you look at crime holistically. And that's Washington Park neighborhoods. Roughly around Washington Park, makes sense, in North Side. Now, Lisbon Avenue on the north, Fleet Street on the south, 40th to 35th, roughly. High crime neighborhoods statistically, you know, diverse, residential, low home ownership, high poverty rates. And for 3 years, this neighborhood got a grant from the federal government. And really what they did from the grant is they just broke down the walls so they could see each other. It was a nonprofit that led the grant, a lot of community meals. They brought police in to do kind of the beat cop patrol. They brought the landlords that own the rental properties to the table. They brought the churches, the nonprofits. They brought Habitat for Humanity to do, you know, improvements to homeowners that couldn't afford the improvements. And so they're tackling crime. It wasn't like we're going to go get crime. It was just let's get to know each other and let's kind of address challenges as we see them. And crime went down 29% in 3 years.
Wow.
And it's big. Now, was there still crime? Yes.
Of course.
But a meaningful change. And then you know what happened? The grant goes away.
Yeah. Right? I was gonna ask.
I don't think that, you know, some of those investments have lasted. I don't think the crime rate in that neighborhood today is where it was before that effort, but it did creep back up. So, but I say that example to tell listeners that we can absolutely reduce crime in any neighborhood in the city of Milwaukee, but it can't just be the Milwaukee Police Department. It can't just be the city attorney or the district attorney. It has to be a much more holistic approach that addresses, you know, these layers of quality of life issues.
We are the Paul Revere Show. We're talking with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, Craig Mastantuono filling in for Mark Thompson, regular host. By the way, if you're using the Civic Media app, we're getting your texts, and please keep them coming. We will try to respond to them, and we appreciate them. So, at the beginning of your remarks, I was thinking to myself that it certainly is a truism, I believe, in our business of criminal justice, that healthy communities, you know, and describe healthy, insert a number of adjectives here, do well on these issues. You know, healthy communities have people on the street, people that aren't afraid to walk the street, people that aren't afraid of, you know, engaging with their fellow citizens. They have thriving businesses. They have homes that are inhabited by people raising children. They have schools that hopefully at least are safe at a basic minimal level. And, you know, and when you go up from there, that do better academically. It, you know, I mentioned that I started off my career as a public defender in Waukesha County. Guess what? We had crime in Waukesha County. We had lots of crime in Waukesha County, or I wouldn't have had a job. And there wouldn't have been five devoted branches to criminal courts out of the 12 branches in Waukesha County, if you include the juvenile branch. And so it wasn't lost on me that places with a lot of resources still have people that make knuckleheaded decisions that affect their lives and affect others. But when you pull resources out of a community and you fail to invest in those communities, you just have an exponentiation of the problems that plague, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes what I've seen can happen is that residents can lose faith. And then that kind of social fabric falls away when the people that, you know, usually are those kind of guardians, as somebody else would call them. But, you know, you can kind of, I think listeners picture in the mind, those people that are really community leaders. Like, let me give you an example. There was a homicide a few blocks from my house about a week ago, maybe 5 days ago. And our community, I live in the historic Concordia neighborhood, just west of Marquette. The discussion that is happening right now amongst neighbors is really kind of what can we do? And you know, I think people are realistic that, you know, will the solution solve every crime or prevent every crime? No, but it's something. And so kind of restoring what were once going on, you know, kind of pre-pandemic, like structured neighborhood walks. And that's a little tiny thing at dusk to go out and, you know, kind of walk the neighborhood. But the conversation now, this week that's going on is about engaging residents that aren't walking, or, you know, we have some large apartment buildings that, you know, like, how do we diversify this conversation? And I'm just so inspired by the intentionality that these neighbors are going about, okay, this tragedy happened. Instead of being scared, instead of running away or building a higher fence, they are actually saying, how do we get to know the people around us better? And how can we, longtime homeowner in the neighborhood, bring new people in so that we know each other and in that way see each other more and actually improve safety?
And who is the alder or alders that you work with in your district?
I overlap several. Alderman Bauman is mine in my neighborhood here and a neighbor of mine. Alderman Murphy, Stamper, Rainey, and a host in Wauwatosa that I don't know well enough to name yet. There's an intersection with city government too. We talked about the race for city attorney. Part of that, the importance and where the city attorney intersects public safety, as you were mentioning, the kind of code enforcement. A lot of these neighborhoods, you ask that guardian on the block, what's the problem property?
It's they that can, building.
Yeah, they can point to it. They know because they live there and they deal with it. And, you know, in the last couple of years, it's my opinion, we've had a city attorney that hasn't been responsive enough to those concerns. And when people call and they call and they call and they go to the meeting at the church down the street and they raise their concerns and nothing is done, There is a certain point of fatigue that sets in, and the guardians quit. And when that happens, that social fabric falls away, and you see problems elevate.
Yeah, so basic participation in civic life, right, is a kind of almost a conditioned precedent to having a healthy and thriving neighborhood. And at its best, where I see criminal justice and kind of municipal law enforcement functioning at its highest, you know, you have a police department that can reach out to an attentive city attorney's office that has community prosecution units that can talk about that building and talk about whether to approach it from a nuisance abatement, kind of, you know, attacking the so-called slumlord perspective or individual citation enforcement. That, you know, assistant city attorney can have access to the community prosecutor assigned to the police district at the state district attorney level in case something needs to be investigated and elevated to a state criminal prosecution. And everybody's talking, right? And they're talking with people like you and the alders involved to get that information back to citizens. And, you know, I don't know, in my perspective, it doesn't seem like that's so insurmountable for offices to achieve.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's a big city, and it's hard when you think about taking that to every neighborhood and every block, but that's just part of the job. That's just what you do. You just show up and you give
I'm from Chicago, Evan. That shouldn't be hard to scale up here in Milwaukee, right?
No, it isn't. I don't think it is. And look, not every intervention that we're talking about, not every example leads to some front page headline lawsuit or receivership action by the city attorney or criminal prosecution by the DA, but showing up and trying and listening and being that civic participation, when people feel abandoned by their local leaders, they then, I think, can kind of turn and abandon the effort. And so I see that. I've seen it turn around and I've seen it fall apart. And I think one of Milwaukee's greatest crime reduction strategies is just doing exactly what we've talked about. And it is kind of the blocking and tackling of good governance, but it goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, something you said touched me, which was, you know, headline cases aren't where, macrocosmic criminal justice and neighborhood safety is won or lost. It's on the 15 cases a week that involve what to do about the dude dealing drugs down the street that's pretty low level dealing, how to handle that case. I mean, people say to me, look, I saw you in the paper on a case. And I always say, when I'm doing my best work, nobody's in the paper. Right. Nobody ever finds out that there was ever even a case, right? And that's because we resolve a lot of things in the criminal justice system before they even get charged, or affording people an opportunity to move through their bad decisions through a deferred prosecution or a diversion agreement where they do the drug treatment, they gain employment, they pay the restitution, or they do what they need to do to get through their bad decisions, and they're given back a chance to walk a healthier path. And, you know,
less likely to do that offense again. And most, in my experience, most kind of constituent calls aren't about a homicide. It's about the garbage cleanup or the house that's run down or the landlord that's a problem. You know, they aren't front page stories, but they are in the lives of those key guardians on the block.
So we got one more segment with State Rep Evan Goyke. Evan, when we come back, I want to talk about two things that it relates to the city attorney's office, which is one, police culture and training and, you know, best practices training for our police department, and then neighborhood development and where the office touches that. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke on the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuono filling in for Mark Thompson. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, learning the lingo.
Jelly, jelly adjective,
Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. 51 tonight under partly cloudy skies. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. A blend of clouds and sun again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 80. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Chance for scattered showers. Lows around 57. Mid-80s Wednesday with a chance for scattered storms. Turning much cooler Thursday with highs in the upper 70s. Storms continue. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 70.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
This is Craig Mastantuono hosting the Paul Revere Show. Mark Thompson is the regular host. I'm sitting in for him tonight. We've got with us Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, Wisconsin's 18th district and candidate for City of Milwaukee City Attorney. And that would be in the spring of 2024. Is that right?
Right.
So we've got a shorter time here, and I want to wrap up with a couple of areas where criminal justice, public safety relate to the city attorney's office specifically. First is And this may take us out just tackling this topic, but the very small topic of police culture and training. So the city attorney's office, first of all, staffs the fire and police commission with an assistant city attorney. And that, you know, that body, due to the recent changes and the coming out of the budget crisis, has not as much of a policy making role as it did. And we don't need to get into a discussion of that. But ACAs, assistant city attorneys, advise the fire and police commission. And I think of the city attorney's role as it relates to the Milwaukee Police Department in two ways: advising on best practices to prevent corporate liability for the city of Milwaukee. And when we talk about police, we're talking about constitutional policing and policing in a way that avoids liability for you and I, the taxpayers of the city of Milwaukee, in damage judgments. And then advising on, you know, a variety of other employment issues, but specifically recruitment, so that the culture of the department is affected. I'm not going to say positively, negatively, but recruiting and culture affect basically a department and its relationships with the community. And I just see those at an all-time kind of low coming out of 2020. And there's bright spots, but my interactions with a lot of police department officers lead me to think that they're leaving our city in droves, that they have a bit of a resentment with regard to being called into question as it relates to racial effect by policing in our city, and that we have a community that doesn't necessarily trust the officers that they're dealing with to investigate crime around them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it there's a lot there to unpack, Craig. I certainly feel and have heard some of those same frustrations. I don't, you know, they're clearly not universal, right? It's hard to label an entire department the size of the Milwaukee Police Department as all one or the other. But those trends, I think, are your perceptions are not inaccurate. So that listeners understand, the city of Milwaukee is self-insured. So, you know, as Greg was talking about, the role of the city attorney in kind of risk management is a kind of key piece, because if there is a violation or deprivation of civil rights or harm, we pay. I mean, that in a civil courtroom, money is the language of resolution, right? So what we are talking about here is financial compensation for wrongdoing, and the city attorney's role is really important in really mitigating that. And what I think, Craig, where you were going, where I like your corporate lawyer analogy, which is in essence, if the city of Milwaukee was insured by some insurance company, their attorneys would be providing their client the same type of advice that we need from the city attorneys, the same kind of role from the city attorney's office to say, here are our best practices. Here is how you conduct yourself as a law enforcement officer to avoid liability.
Here's how we avoid liability so that our citizens or our corporation doesn't have to pay out money when things go bad. Every corporation does that, right? And cities are no different. And I look at it as, you know, a comprehensive training program that in the way I envision it involves, first of all, the city attorney's office. Secondly, the district attorney's office, which is more of an expertise on constitutional policing and police citizen encounters. And then private providers, if appropriate, including people like myself, or retired law enforcement, et cetera, to, you know, kind of get the training program at least to a point where officers know where the lines are that they can and can't cross.
Yeah, and this is not to suggest that the city attorney's office should be responsible for training all aspects of the police department.
No.
Or that are, you know, but it is an important piece of the education and training officers have and should have. And, you know, it's not to say that they don't have any liability training. And I think the conversation that we've had tonight about public safety is to, in my role or hopeful future role as city attorney, is to make sure that you're at the table and part of the collaboration. I mean, what I was talking about earlier about healthy, low crime neighborhoods, it's not just the police. They are a part of the solution. They can't be the only piece. A city attorney is not the only solution, but they're a part. So you have to interact with these different governmental entities in a really meaningful and collaborative way. Now, in the case of the city attorney and the police department, you have this important financial relationship as it relates to the city budget and paying out lawsuits. This is good for the taxpayers, right? It's to avoid costly lawsuits. It's good for the police department to avoid getting sued. It's good for residents to not have the deprivation of rights that would be the grounds to the lawsuit. It is a win, 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 win. And it's all just about the kind of restoration and reparation of this relationship between the public and local unit of government that we've talked about a lot tonight.
And restoring trust. Now let's move to culture, because look, as the saying goes, culture eats training for breakfast, right? So you can have all these great training programs, but if you have people that are involved in departments that, and again, we're painting with a broad brush. I'm old enough to have educated when I was teaching at Carroll University, now police detectives with Milwaukee Police Department. And now in my role as an adjunct faculty member at Marquette Law School, having current prosecutors have come through my class and defenders. And so I have a lot of friends among those groups, but it is my perception that you can affect the culture of a department by focusing on who do we want to hire. So that guardian analogy that you were making earlier, you know, that came out of the police and law enforcement movement. Are we warriors or are we guardians, right? As it relates to how we patrol our city. And, you know, do you see a role for the city attorney's office, at least in advising, on maybe other models that are working elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have every intention of not burying myself in the top floor of the annex somewhere. Yeah, I'm not, you got to be out there. And that includes riding along, that includes walking the neighborhood, that includes listening to all sides involved, and also paying attention to what's working in other places. Just because it happened in Baltimore doesn't mean we do the exact same thing. The exact same outcome happens in Milwaukee, but it means we should pay attention to what they're doing. You know, we should challenge ourselves and the status quo here to always be seeking evidence and following that evidence to what that best practice is. Starts with listening, Craig, right? A lot of this is just kind of, what is the tone? What is the culture? What is that? What's the feeling on the block? And you know, we have a lot of experts right here. You know, I've talked about them as guardians, the little old lady that knows everybody's business on the block. A lot of people have a lot of expertise in our own community. That we just have to, you know, break down those barriers and listen to what they're saying.
It is a part of any healthy city to address these topics. And I agree with you. There's no one fix. It's been a great discussion. You and I could roll right into a second hour talking about crime, criminal justice in our city. But thank you for coming on tonight, Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, 18th District and candidate for Milwaukee City Attorney. I will be back and filling in for Mark next Monday, 7 o'clock on the Paul Revere Show. Thanks for joining us.
Next. Consumers everywhere are rediscovering the benefits of buying locally produced food. Not only is it fresher, tastier, and more nutritious, it's also good for the local economy. And did you know the Village Hearth and Artisan Hearth hamburger and hot dog buns and rolls you love are baked right here in the Midwest? With the state-of-the-art bakeries and facilities throughout the Midwest, freshly baked buns and rolls are delivered fresh every day to your neighborhood grocers. Village Hearth and Artisan Hearth buns and rolls, locally baked, delivered fresh daily.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Emory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News
app.
I'm-